Now, the next name is 86, Suresha, which means the Lord of the gods. Sura generally means the demigods. So this is a very common name in India. Just like they're common, I don't know in your language, but in English they're common names like John and Stephen and Peter. So in India there are common names like Suresh, Mahesh, Rajesh. So Suresh is a very common name. It means the Lord of the Lords, the God of the Gods. This name is generally associated with Indra in common parlance and understanding. And even in the Bhagavatam, Suresha, this word comes up several times, which means the Lord of the demigods, the King of the demigods. Surendra is a synonym of Suresha. Or it can mean the leading demigods, who are leaders of the others. But the real Suresha is Krishna. He's the Lord of Indra also, as is well demonstrated in the Govardhan Lila. So Krishna is the Lord of all the demigods. This is a very important point to understand. We see from Bhagavad Gita that Krishna, he explains this. It's a very common misconception, even at the time of Arjuna, what to speak of now, that various demigods are supreme, or they're independent of Vishnu, but actually, as Krishna explains in various ways in Bhagavad Gita, all the demigods are inferior to him. Now, the word Sura, this is sometimes understood to mean a devotee. So it means the Lord of all the devotees. Another meaning of Sura is Shushtu Rati Dadati Iti Suraha. One who very well gives benedictions is called a Sura. So that's a name for the demigods who are approached by people in this world to attain benedictions. Kangshanta Kama Kamanang Siddhim Yajanta Iha Devataha. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, people who desire material boons, they approach demigods. And in fact, the demigods do give different boons, as stated in various shastras in Bhagavatam, second canto. There are a list of various boons which may be obtained by worshipping different demigods. But Suresha, the Lord of those who give boons, suggests that the boon that Krishna gives is much better than that given by any demigod, for which he is also known as Varadaraja. Vara means a boona, Varada means a giver, and Varadaraja means the king of those who give boons. So there is a very famous deity of Vishnu, Varadaraja, at Kanchi, in what is now called Tamil Nadu. And written on his hand, he's giving with his, in the pose of giving benediction, is Ma Shuchaha. Famous words from Bhagavad Gita. Do not despair. Do not worry. Do not lament. So this is the best boon, Abhaidana. Giving fearlessness. Krishna gives fearlessness. Now, how so, why so, and the benefits of that, that will be discussed in the next name, Sharana. So he's the king of all the give, he's the best of all those who give benedictions, because demigods can give benedictions, just like you can get a good wife. That's stated in Bhagavatam. One can get rulership over the world. One can be promoted to the heavenly planets. But all these worldly benedictions, they simply award one more anxiety and one fear because they award one more material existence. And the demigods themselves are also fearful inasmuch as they're not fully surrendered to Krishna. So, Krishna is the best of the givers of benediction. And even the benedictions that are given by the demigods, they're not really given by them at all because they have nothing to give. They have no independent power to give anything. As Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Satya Shraddhaya Yukta, he refers to worshippers of demigods who worship them with faith. In the previous verse, in the verse previous to this, he has stated that people who have faith in demigods, a strong faith in demigods, that faith is given by him. So, Satya Shraddhaya Yukta, Tatsya Radhanam Ihate, Labhate, Chattatak Kaman, Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan. He states that people have great faith in demigods. If you worship this demigod, you will get this benediction and that benediction. And because of that, they worship the demigods and they get their desire fulfilled. But, Krishna says, actually, it's not the demigod who's giving it really. They're just doing it as on behalf of me, or they get their power for doing so for me, from me. So the suras, or the demigods, the givers of benedictions, they're not really givers of benedictions at all, or they're only so as agents of the Supreme Lord. This name Suresh also delineates the suras from the asuras, because although Krishna is the Lord of everyone, he's particularly the Lord of the godly people. So even though we may say that the demigods, they may be materially devoted, materially motivated devotees that sakama bhaktas, they have material desires, but they are devotees and they are awarded responsible positions in the management of the universe, and they are protected by Vishnu. He's their Lord and Master. Means one who is the Lord and Master doesn't just control others and tell them what to do, but he has responsibility to protect them. So Krishna takes that responsibility also. Ete chang shakalapung, what is it? Ete chang shakalapung sa Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swam Indradri Vyakalam Lokam Ridayanti Yuge Yuge. All this famous verse from Bhagavatam states that of all the various forms of the Lord, Krishna is the original form, and these various forms, Krishna in various forms, appears in every age to protect Indra and company from the disturbance of various demons. Sura can also mean a wise, learned person, a teacher. So in that sense, Krishna, he is the Lord of all the learned people. So learning in Vedic culture that is generally associated with godliness. There's an idea of that in other cultures also. There's a general idea that persons who are more educated are more cultured. It's generally expected like that. Although we see the students in university students in the modern age, they may be more sophisticated than others, but they drink, they smoke, they take drugs, they have illicit sex, and it's not really cultured. But Vedic knowledge is associated with saintliness, because one has to learn it from a guru, and the guru doesn't accept a lout or a brat as his disciple. The first training is character training, without which learning is considered useless. So the best of the givers of benediction is Narayana. He can say, do not fear. as long as one is aspiring for material benedictions, there must be fear. But when one approaches him, sarvadhaman parityaja mame kam sharanam raja hang tva sarvapai pebhyo mokshayishami mashucha, and gives up all other aspirations than to fully take shelter of him, then one is relieved from material existence, which is the cause of all anxiety, and therefore he says, Mashucha, don't be in anxiety. I will relieve you from all anxiety. So this also indicates that he bestows benedictions on those who bestow benedictions. The demigods, they are approached by others for benedictions, but they themselves have to receive benediction from Vishnu. So it's really most, if we can worship Vishnu, then why bother with smaller people? So the next name, name 87, Sharanam, very important name. It's one of the names that define our relationship with Vishnu. There are various names, just like Prabhu, he's the master, which means we are the servant, or Ishvara, he's the controller, we are the control. But Sharana means the shelter or the refuge, and as that fits with the previous word, Suresha, the best of the givers of benediction, because he says, Mame kam sharanam raja. You take his ultimate instruction in Bhagavad Gita is to take shelter of him, by which all auspiciousness is there for the jiva. And as long as he doesn't take shelter of Krishna, there is no question of actual auspiciousness. So in this material world, as long as and as much as we are not taking shelter of Krishna, then we remain in anxiety. That is our constitutional position. Bhavantame vanu charam nirantara prashanta nishesha manoratantara kadaham aikantika nitya kinkara prahashirishami sa eva, what is it? Prahashirishami sanata jivita. The sense of having a master. When by becoming your follower, by becoming your servant, bhavantamevanu charandira, your eternal servant, prashanta nishe, then one will achieve complete peace, relief from material distress, prashanta nishe, the mind will stop doing somersaults all over the place. Kadaham, when will I, kadaham ekantika nit, I will be your single-pointed, eternal, personal servant. And then I will simply be very, very happy, praharsha, living, knowing that I have a master. So the whole attempt in this material existence is to live without a master, to attempt to nominate oneself as the actual master, and in this way dominate everyone else. But we are beset with powers much greater than us, therefore we're always in anxiety, but our constitutional position is simply to accept that Krishna is our master, and benign master, not one that's going to exploit us, mistreat us. Of course, the devotees outlook is that even if Krishna does mistreat me, still I will not go away from him. But actually he is one who is worth taking shelter of, because he's quite capable to maintain us, and he does so very nicely. He looks after his devotees very nicely. He's Suresha, he's the master of the devotees, so he looks after them very nicely. This term Sharanyam, or one who should be taken shelter of, comes in a verse of Bhagavatam, Devarshir Bhutapta Nirnang Pitrinam Nakinkaro Nayam rinichara jan saravatmana yasharanam sharanyam gatomo kundam parihrityakartam. That in this material world, everyone is indebted to others, to demigods and respectable people, to greatly learned people who give us instruction, to other living beings, particularly to relatives, other living beings, human beings and other living beings also. In the modern age, we don't see it much, but in traditional society, people had horses. And I was just in Bulgaria, and still it's common. Horses, horse and cart is used. So people, it's natural for people to live with animals, horses, cows, dogs, cats, or not exactly in, but with, but in, you know, people to live among animals. And some people keep pigs and chickens and also, but, sheep, all this. So, also by being the master, then we also have a responsibility to them, which, in the modern age, or actually due to Christian so-called philosophy, people think that the animals are just for us to totally exploit. But the Vedic concept is that every living being, if we are to naturally humans, they take a superior position in relation to the cows and dogs and cats who look to them for maintenance. And humans should maintain them and not mistreat them and kill them. Due to some misunderstanding that they don't have souls. So, we have responsibility, and to some extent we take shelter of them. Just as they take definitely we take shelter of superior beings like demigods. We're relying on them to give sufficient sunshine, sufficient rain, everything in balance. We're dependent upon superiors such as father and mother and teacher and learned persons who give us knowledge of how to live in this world. But even animals, if we want to eat, then we require to plow the land. The bull is there. The cow gives milk. So we also, the dog is a watchdog, so the dog is also helping us. If any thief comes at night, the dog will be up and barking. So to some extent, we take shelter of all these living beings, and we have to reciprocate with them. We have debts to them. But if we take shelter of Krishna, we have no more debts to anyone. Not that a devotee is ungrateful to anyone, but he recognizes that the source of everything is Krishna, and by taking full shelter of Krishna, we are relieved from all other debts, and therefore we can be relieved from our bondage to this material world. There is, in the Bhagavatam, there is the narration of the Valakilyas, who are 60,000 sages, who are very, very small, and they were performing austerities, hanging upside down from a tree, because they had become brahmacharis for the sake of attaining liberation from this world. But because they didn't marry, they hadn't fulfilled their debts to their forefathers. And so they had to perform austerities to nullify the effect of that sin of not having served their forefathers by marrying and producing children. But if one becomes a devotee of Krishna, one is freed from such debts. If one fully surrenders to Krishna, one is free from all worldly debts. So there's no other way actually to get liberated from this world but to take shelter of Krishna, because there's always some debt to someone in some way. Even if we don't eat, we just breathe air, but still the air is provided by various demigods. They're the agents in providing it. So Krishna is the one who, by taking shelter of, we can be freed from the entangling, the entanglement of taking shelter of so many other living beings. who themselves are incomplete and imperfect, whereas Krishna is complete and perfect. So this is an essential name, Sharan. He's not just a controller. He's not a distant god who just tells us do this, do that. But he's very kind, just like the children. They take shelter of their parents, expecting their parents to be very kind, or a dog takes shelter, expecting the master to be very kind to him. So Krishna is very kind and therefore worth taking shelter of in the Vallabh Sampradaya, one of the two most famous chants are Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama, Krishna is my shelter. So they repeat that again and again just to imbibe the consciousness that Krishna is my shelter. Shri Krishna Sharanam, Krishna is my shelter, Krishna is my shelter, Krishna is my shelter. They say that over and over again. What else? What other points have I got here? Yeah, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. That's the only way to get free from... Otherwise, if we're trying to take shelter in this material world, there is no shelter. We identify with this body and we think that we'll take shelter of others and maintain the body, but ultimately the body is destroyed. So it's a very cruel situation in this material world. Only when we come to the spiritual platform beyond that of having a material body can we escape from that situation. And we can do so by surrendering to Krishna. Devihi esha guna mahi mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Krishna says, those who take shelter of me, they can cross beyond this maya of mine, which is otherwise impossible to overcome. So, prapadyante, prapatti, that's very similar to sharanapati or sharanagati, the taking shelter. Otherwise, if we don't take shelter of Krishna, that one person we have to take shelter of, then we try to take shelter of so many others, but none of, even all combined together, everyone else, they're incapable to give us proper shelter, because death is always there. Suffering is always there in so many ways. So, particularly, Krishna gives shelter to those who are in misery. He extends himself to those who take shelter of him in suffering. He's the final goal and destination. In another sense, he's the shelter also, in as much as when all the worlds are destroyed during the time of the between. The time of the universal destruction, when all the universe, everything, the whole of matter just becomes dissolved, and the jivas, between the time of the destruction and then again creation, all the jivas enter within Vishnu. So in that sense, they're sheltered in him also. And actually, all the jivas and everything in existence is sheltered in him. But it's just a matter of recognizing that. We can't be outside the shelter of Vishnu in the sense that he encompasses, everything is within him. But our failure to recognize that leaves us in a state of unshelteredness. So it's just really a matter of just recognizing that. We are within Vishnu. We are sheltered by Vishnu. So to give up our pantomime of pretending to be something different than the servant of Krishna and just surrender to him, and then everything becomes very nice. So he is the proper shelter. Others may be called shelter. People approach different demigods and consider them to be their shelter. The wife approaches the husband thinking he will be the shelter. But the Balas Jane Hasharanang Pitaro Nrsimha. Prahlad says that the child thinks that his parents can shelter him, but actually he cannot. Nartasya Chagadamudanvati Madhyato. No. A distressed person, someone who's there's no shelter in this material world. We can bring medicine for a sick person, but that may or may not help. Someone who's drowning in the ocean may bring a boat, but there's no guarantee he'll survive. Taptasya chat pratividhir yahasandasishtas. Whatever we think of as a shelter in this world, there is no shelter, there is no antidote to the problem of material existence, except Vishnu, as Prahlad Maharaj says. Tavan, what is it? No, last line I'm forgetting also. So, he is the proper shelter. But this is to be remembered always. Krishna is our shelter. There's no shelter outside of Krishna. We sometimes see that persons who are on the path of Krishna consciousness, or brahmacharis in Krishna consciousness, they leave to take shelter of a wife. But there's no shelter in this material world. A wife can provide some kind of shelter. Not that there's no shelter, but the ultimate shelter is Krishna. There's no shelter in Maya. And that's something that devotees who decide that, well, I've had enough Krishna consciousness for the time being, now it's time to enjoy this world a bit, they very soon find, I think you had some experience like this, they very soon find that it's after being sheltered by Krishna and his devotees in Krishna consciousness, it's a very frightful situation in the material world. The devotees, because they're peaceful, being sheltered in the shelter of Krishna, they have no motive to exploit others, and even without having big seminars about devotee care and all this kind of thing, if devotees are Krishna conscious, they'll automatically they care for others and they help others in all respects. They're not in anxiety because they're sheltered by Krishna. But in material existence, everyone's in anxiety, and the friendship is the friendship is a false pact where people, they don't really care for each other, but there's some kind of pretense of friendship. But actually, everyone's on their own, especially in the modern world. And they like it like that. They don't even want to have a family or real friends. They like to keep their distance from everyone and very impersonal. But people, they're suffering so much like this. It's harsh. Modern life in particular is very harsh. So the good point of that is that people may become so unhappy at having no shelter, that if we offer the shelter of Krishna, if we can be representatives of Krishna and offer shelter, then people, they may want to accept that. So, Hare Krishna, any question about this? Yes?
Krishna is the best shelter.
Krishna is the best shelter? Yes. Ultimately, he's the only shelter. Why does the jiva so much avoid taking shelter of Krishna? Well, as a jiva who has avoided taking shelter of Krishna, you yourself can answer that question. Why have I left Krishna? Why do I not surrender to Krishna? It is the misuse of one's own free will. Why do we not surrender to Krishna? We have a bad habit, going back for many lifetimes, of wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna. Therefore, we should hear these kind of discussions. These kind of discussions are especially meant to convince us that there is no shelter other than Krishna and induce us to take shelter of Krishna. We take shelter of Krishna in the beginning stage of devotional service by following the instructions of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, by following the process of sadhana bhakti, performing service. So this way we take shelter of Krishna. We take shelter of Krishna by the process of sharanagati, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajanam rakshushati ti vishvaso guptritve varanam tata atma nikshepa karpanye sharavidha sharanagati. The sixfold process of taking shelter is by resolving to do only that which is favorable for advancement in devotional service, by resolving to forswear all that is an obstacle in devotional service, by having firm faith that Krishna will protect us. If he's our shelter, then surely Krishna will protect us and maintain us. By giving up all considerations, just fully taking shelter at Krishna, throwing ourselves at Krishna. Shouldn't I? Just do it, that's all. You just have to do it. And being very humble. Because one cannot take shelter of another if one treats him as equal. Anything else? Yeah, please.
Only by full surrender, right?
We can or we cannot? Cannot.
Unless we...
Yeah, we cannot enter the spiritual world unless we fully surrender to Krishna.
What is the role then of Varnashram?
What is the role of Varnashram in fully surrendering to Krishna? Nothing. But Varnashram creates a situation in which society can be somewhat peaceful and organized in a way that is more favorable for executing Krishna consciousness, but intrinsically has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is transcendental to any material considerations. Nevertheless, that is a system given by Krishna himself to create a situation in which, if properly guided, that will help people to be somewhat more peaceful in their mind so they can take up and well practice Krishna consciousness. Then why so much emphasis on it? Because the whole society in the modern world is completely insane, just in case you hadn't noticed. And it requires some proper guidance, because I was saying that people are suffering so much we can lead them to take shelter of Krishna. But increasingly we see that people are just so messed up that you can't even talk to them practically. I mean, it's very common you meet people who are just, they're so far gone on drugs, and they're so distressed, or they're so egoistic that they can't even begin to think of Krishna consciousness or take to Krishna consciousness. So Varnashram is meant to regulate society so that people can lead a somewhat sane life. Otherwise, if people are just like ghosts, then what can... Of course, in Slovenia, people are very civilized, comparatively, compared to other places. That's also true. But that's also an obstacle, because it makes them somewhat complacent and proud. They don't need Krishna consciousness. But the complacency and pride will fade away when the oil-based economy breaks down, which it can do not just because of the oil, but in so many ways. We can't expect, as Srila Prabhupada and many others have predicted societal breakdown. It can't go on, especially a cow slaughtering society just can't go on forever. And then we should have our varnashram farms so that that model is there, that others can replicate that. But the varnashram farm, no doubt Srila Prabhupada put so much stress on it. That is a major mission of our society, which we have up to now largely not put much effort into. So that's something we should do. But we should understand that simply farming the land, that is not our mission. The mission is to have Krishna conscious farms. Otherwise, what's the use? There's no point in it. So therefore, Varnashram is not in and of itself anything to do with surrender. But if by following the Varnashram system one worships Vishnu, that is also very good. And in the beginning, consideration, that is there, that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Rai Ramananda about the process of achieving the goal of life, the first proposition was Varnashram acharavata purushena parapuman vishnura radyate pantananya tattosha karanam. The statement is there from Shastra that by following Varnashram duties and worshipping the Supreme Lord Vishnu, this is the only way to satisfy Vishnu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that proposal as being external because it presupposes that some material adjustment is required or some material situation is required for bhakti. But the very fact that Ramananda quoted it from Shastra means that it's not totally without meaning. But in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's elevated system of spiritual consciousness, it has no intrinsic role. It has, you could say, a secondary role, or a tangential role is maybe a better, more precise term. Yes, please.
Thank you, Shama. In the lecture, you also mentioned that this material world is like a dream, and Prabhupada also mentioned that when we go to sleep, we have night dream, and when we close our eyes, we have day dream. Can you please explain a little bit, because when you dream and, for example, one line attacks you and you wake up and you can see, well, it's over and it was just a dream.
Yeah.
In a daydream, it's a little bit more, you know, serious.
Yes, sometimes the analogy is given that this world is like a dream, and Srila Prabhupada gave that analogy. Just like at night we dream, and it seems very real. For instance, Srila Prabhupada often used the example of a tiger, I guess you could say a lion also, or a boar or a snake or any such thing for that matter, attacks you and you feel the dread as if a real tiger is there. But then when you wake up and you feel there was nothing there, so it's just some imagination. So that's called a dream. And we don't, after we wake up, we don't take it very seriously because we realize that it has no factual existence. So this whole existence in the material world is like that also. Just because it goes on for a longer, each lifetime goes on for a longer period, therefore we take it to be reality. But actually, if we have a lifetime of 70 years, 70 years, it's also just a blip in time. So we take it to be real. We have something, I have a new factory I have to open. I've invested so much money. Can I get it back? And I have to get my children married and so many concerns and considerations. But then you die and that's all gone. And then you're in another body and you're a little puppy and you're thinking, now I have to go and suck the milk from my mother. So that what we consider to be reality is just gone and it doesn't exist anymore. So in that sense, material existence is like a dream. But in another sense, this material world is not wholly unreal. as certain philosophers claim. And even a dream is not wholly unreal. That we experience something, the very fact that we describe a dream means that it has reality at some platform of existence. That the experience, there is an experience which we call a dream. But that it has no, it is insubstantial, that is the point. So this material world is like a dream in as much as it exists, but it is insubstantial. It is no actual relation, is no relationship with actual reality. So reality is the spiritual world with Krishna. Okay. Anything else? Any other questions? Yes, please. Many questions. Yeah.
There are two issues. One with beautiful life and the other with wealth, without wife.
Are there two Vishnus? One with a beautiful wife and one with no wife. Well, there's one Vishnu and there are many Vishnus. Both things are true. Not only two, but many. Can't understand that? Well, don't worry, many great rishis, they also can't understand it. We exult in the fact that we can't understand it. That's also one of the names coming up soon. Everything is possible for him. So, he has one wife, he has many wives, he has no wives. He is his own wives because they are only expansions of him. So all these things are true. Not understandable materially. Yes, please.
We are trying to spiritually take care of our devotees in the community in the form of so-called mentorship. Like giving to devotees spiritual friendship and guidance towards Krishna. Is there
we are trying to give guidance or shelter to the devotees in form of so-called mentorship, in which we give friendship and so forth. Well, we can give shelter to others in as much as we take shelter of Krishna. One cannot do by any material formula. One can do by material formulae, but they don't work. So, as much as we are sheltered by Hari, Guru and Vaishnava, that much we become competent to shelter others. And there may be details of that also in techniques and this and that. But the core principle is that those who are sheltered, they can give shelter. Because ultimately no jiva can give shelter to another. But he can do so as much as he takes shelter of Krishna. Yeah, then you wanted to say something else?
Yes, regarding the character student and the teacher, the first thing of the teacher student is character.
The teacher, his first concern is to inculcate good character. And in fact, the student won't be accepted unless it's seen that they have at least somewhat good character. It's not exactly taught. To some extent it may be taught by precept, but more so by practice. There's practice and precept. So if the teacher himself has good qualities, then the student will imbibe that. The children are like sponges, unless they're, as in the modern age, they're raised on internet. But children are quite simple and trusting. That's generally their nature. And they tend to imitate those. They imitate. Just like language and mannerisms, and values, culture, it's all imbibed. It's not so much taught as imbibed from others around us. So, behavior and character also.
And then it is said that devotees automatically develop the qualities of the demigods, the shloka. The question is, should this be, should we count only that this will develop automatically, or should we separate endeavor?
Separate endeavor to inculcate good qualities in others. Well, Srila Prabhupada, we know that in the next year's devotion, I believe he wrote that there's no need to make any separate endeavor just by becoming a devotee. One will imbibe all good qualities. But part of becoming a devotee is being trained and learning the Shastra, hearing the Shastra, which tells us of the good qualities of great devotees and of Krishna. And so we also desire to emulate those qualities. So we can understand from this that, yes, we can discuss qualities like humility, compassion, cleanliness, austerity, and so on, but within the context of devotional service, not that we try to do so independently of devotional service. That's why when the waves of Kavi mania were blowing throughout ISKCON. We used to hear Kavi this, Kavi says this, Kavi says that. I wasn't very happy with that. And some devotees, including several very respected devotees, said, well, it's just like a template. You can use it. You see, you can use it in Krishna consciousness. There's a lot of very good ideas which you can use in Krishna consciousness. But I wasn't very happy with that because we have our training manuals in Shastra, and we have our role models to follow. So if we take from non-devotees, we're going to imbibe some of their values also, even though he may have very good ideas in some ways, but those good ideas, none of those good ideas are not in Shastra. In fact, I picked up one of his books once. It was in the temple president's office in one temple I was visiting, and I just flipped open. It wasn't the Seven Habits. I just flipped it open. And on one page, he gave a list of the good qualities that his idea of an ideal person should have. And one of them is that he does not accept anyone as his guide. I mean, that's completely antithetical to Krishna consciousness, in which it's required to have a guru and gurus. And it's also ridiculous because he himself is guiding others by writing books and giving seminars and getting lots of money for doing so. So I thought, this guy's bogus. And devotees were saying, you see, he said he puts among the list of books he recommends, he said you should read uplifting literature, and he gives as an example Bhagavad Gita. But that's only one. You know, he that means he puts Bhagavad Gita on the level of the other books which he considers up. In other words, he's not on the spiritual platform. So I'm just using that as an example, how the process of devotional service is perfect and complete. There are other arguments given that, you see, you can, if you want to learn to use a computer, you can go to a computer manual. But that's something, it's completely different, because what Kavi was and is teaching is, it's concerned with personality, consciousness, the mind, and this is the subject matter of Krishna consciousness. So I'm not saying he doesn't have some good ideas, but I'm saying it's better not to get those ideas from him. We can better to hear from the acharyas and from Shastra. And that all comes within the scope of devotional service. Otherwise, the tendency is to get diverted and confused, and we become so reverent towards him that we start to think that, well, even we can't distinguish between the things he says that are right and that are not right. And as there's no emphasis on Krishna consciousness as the goal of life in his teachings, then we think that these qualities are qualities independent of Krishna consciousness, and that to develop these qualities is the real goal of life, not Krishna consciousness. It's better to be seriously endeavoring in Krishna consciousness and to be roughly behaved, maybe due to some previous habits, or than to be very sophisticated and well behaved and not Krishna conscious. Far better. Even to be slightly Krishna conscious and to have many bad habits is unlimitedly better than being very good in the worldly sense and having no interest in Krishna consciousness. Even not being directly opposed to Krishna consciousness, but having no interest in it. Hare Krishna.